So hi, thank you for coming. My name is Kevin Creamer. I'm from the University of Richmond. I'm going to really quickly introduce the rest of the gang who is here today, and then we will kind of lay out what we're after in this time that we have together. Again, the title here is Does Change Equal Progress? Using Cross-Institutional Survey Data to Examine LMS Conversions and the Smart Device Explosion, and we're having some cool screen effects, so I hope you enjoy those as we go. We have on the keyboard back here Mr. Dave Consiglio. He is the head of Research Support and Educational Technology at Bryn Mawr College. I actually know these people so socially, I never know their titles. But Dave is also the primary investigator on the survey that we work on together. Gentry Hulbert is the Director for Library and Resource Services at Spring Hill College. Josh Wilson is the Director for Academic Support and User Services at Brandeis University. We are missing today Catherine Furlong, who is the Director for Access and Technical Services at Lafayette College. And again, I said who I am, so that doesn't really matter. If we can go to the next slide, the game plan for today. So we only have a little bit of time, and if you've ever messed with data, that means you can't hardly get anything started before you have to finish. So what we're going to be looking at are two specific things. We want to look at how change works at our own institutions. First, we're going to take a look at how change works when we, the institution, is introducing the change for the schools. How is that received? How does that play out? And then we're going to look at how change works when it's coming at us. And this is kind of a sliver of the bring your own device, but it's going to focus more just on the smart devices. There's so many other devices that they're bringing, but what we've got to talk about today is about the smart devices as it goes. We're going to tell these kind of as stories, the way that the research came together for us. I hope you find them very interesting. At the same time, we want you guys to interrupt us all the time with questions, with your own anecdotes about how you see this or how it's not happening in that way, perhaps back at your school. So please do bring your questions to us. First, just a little bit about the research before we then actually get into talking about things. The way the data has been gathered is through the Measuring Information Service Outcomes Survey, sometimes known as the MISO survey. As of this year, we hit 100 institutions that have participated. The survey is open right now, and so we're getting more respondents as we go. As of last year, we had 105,000 respondents nationally, and you get the breakdown there of the different kind of populations. One of the things, if the screen will be okay with us, that is something we're really proud of is the response rates. How many people have tried to do assessment, have not tried, but have actually done assessment back at your campuses? It is a bear, especially when it comes to getting student response rates and things like that. So for us to be getting 57.9% over the last three-year period for faculty, undergraduates were over 50% of the students that we're surveying, getting all that back from them, and again, staff, 53.6%. Let's see, I want to make sure I hit all of my notes. I should also say that the survey itself was originally founded among some liberal arts colleges. So in the earlier years of the survey, a lot of the data that we collected, and we started back around 2005, the survey was primarily liberal arts colleges. Since then, it's grown as we're getting up to 100 schools. In addition to the liberal arts like Bryn Mawr or Middlebury or Vassar, we've got national institutions like Brandeis, Brigham Young, UNC Charlotte. We're getting community colleges. Actually, Tallahassee joined us this year, and so we're really excited to have them and perhaps others join us down the line. And then we have other schools that don't, there are so many schools that don't fit necessarily into anyone. So Massachusetts Art and Design, it was University of New Mexico Health Sciences. So something like that, that we brought in. So lots of different schools are coming in. We're finding that they're able to make use of the survey. A little bit more about the survey as well. The survey seeks to find out how faculty, students, and staff perceive IT and library services and resources. We don't increasingly library and IT stuff is a continuum rather than something you can distinctly separate. And so the nice thing about this survey is that it really pulls it all together, and then you can pull it back out and figure out what that means kind of within your own organizational divisions and things like that. So with that said, again, we asked about how many of you have done any kind of assessment back on your campuses. I wanted to start by talking a little bit about learning management systems. How many of you have, in the last few years, changed your learning management system? So we've got a number of folks in the room who have changed their system. How many of you are possibly going to be changing your learning management system? Okay, so I think that's the rest of the room. So we've got a lot of people who are involved in this change. Those of you who have already done it can tell you it's not fun. It can be. I mean, you can make some parts of it good. But it's a lot of work, and part of what we're hoping to do here is see, you know, so what are the outcomes of being able to do that kind of thing? I think at that point, I'm just going to turn it over to you, Josh, and let you pick it up from here.
So full disclosure, Brandeis University is in the midst of switching its LMS right now, and I wish I had this analysis to offer to my CIO when we started in the middle, but we have it now. So my hope is that those of you who need this prior to your own switch are going to have it in hand. So the question is, what's the effect as seen by our students and our faculty when we go through an LMS change, one of these top-down system changes that we decide for our institutions? So to study this question, we assembled a data set of about 55 institutions that had taken the MISO survey, some once, some multiple times. So of those 55 institutions, as you can see, since 2006, about three-fifths, Dave tells me, is three-fifths have done an LMS change and the remainder have not. So when we look at the effects of this particular system change, LMS system change, we'll be looking really hard at those three-fifths and what their experiences are. So to our knowledge, this is the largest data set assembled to investigate this question. On the other hand, you might be saying, it's only 55 institutions. So 55 institutions is plenty. It gives us a really good start, a good set of indicators. It's not comprehensive to all of higher ed, so that we're aware of. But on the other hand, 55 institutions is not a small number, and it's something that we can begin to think about and draw conclusions from as we have this conversation in this room. So let's look first at the changing use of the LMS for schools that have experienced a system change. So first, let me help you read these charts. So this chart and the two that follow it look at system change over a period of time. So on the far left, you see pre-transition. Schools that didn't actually go through this transition are also lumped into that pre-transition phase. And then the blue screen tells you something else. So the next data point is schools that are in the middle of the transition. And then there are three following data points. So there are schools at, thank you very much. There are schools at 1 year post-transition, schools at 2 years post-transition, and schools at 3 years post-transition. And the glorious thing about 3 years post-transition is that's about the moment when you start planning your next LMS change. So think about this in the grand cycle of life for this particular system. So what do we see here? So the blue line is students, the red line is faculty. So for both of these groups, we see similar kinds of patterns, not identical, but similar. So you'll notice that students overall make more use of the LMS than faculty do. So for students, what we see is from the pre-transitional moment to the middle of the transition, there's a drop-off in use. And then at year one, there's a further drop-off in use. And then this surge of use in year two and sort of continuation of that level of use at years three and beyond. For the faculty, it's a little bit different. In the middle of the transition, we see a small spike in use compared to the pre-transitional state. Then there's a drop-off in use and then a steady climb. So if we look at these lines from pre-transition to 3 years, one of the things that you can see is even though that there are some peaks and valleys here, in general, the movement is this. So at about 3 years post-transition, a little earlier for students, we have, for those institutions that went through an LMS change, we have the LMS being used more 2 to 3 years out than it was before the transition. So that's not a bad story. Change your LMS, it gets used more. Let's dig in just a little bit more here and look at the importance. So here we see roughly similar kinds of patterns. Both faculty and students show the same pattern in this case. So for both of them, there's a drop-off in importance of the LMS during the transition, and then this sort of steady rise. What we see that is common to students in both use and importance is that students tend to have that rise faster, and faculty tend to have a longer, slower climb. But in both cases, we see that 3 years out, the LMS is more important for both populations at institutions where there's been a system change. So thinking back, for those institutions with a system change, there's more use made of their CMS. It is more important to their faculty and student campus constituents. So let's turn now to satisfaction with the LMS. Not quite as happy a story. So these lines are doing different kinds of things. So students are more satisfied than faculty across the transitional period and beyond with the LMS. So for students, there's a drop-off in satisfaction in the middle of the transition, a holding at that point through the first year, a rise in the second year to roughly where they were at the pre-transitional state, and then they continue from the second year into the third year at roughly that same level. So for students, they start at one level at the pre-transition and end up at that same level. So if we think about the way in which we sell our LMS on our campuses, so what did we say at Brandeis? We said, you know what, you're going to like this better. This is going to serve you better. So this data indicates that that was not true for students, and nor was it really true for faculty. We see here that faculty had a drop-off in satisfaction at the mid-transition point, and we see that they sort of stayed at that lower level of satisfaction before having a bit of a climb at 3 years post-transition. So this is a little sobering. We go through all this work and all this expense and chew up all the bandwidth in terms of the air that we use on our campuses communicating about various things. And what do we get? A system that is more used, more important, but not more satisfactory.
Josh, if I can just jump in, because one thing is you're looking at the data here, and this is true of the other slides as well. The scale that you're looking at along the left here is showing a scale of from somewhat satisfied to satisfied, and those are the top parts of the scale for people to be responding to. So they're not coming at you with pitchforks, right? It's not, you know, it's not a change in that way.
Although it feels like that at my institution.
But and even for the other scales we were looking at, in all three cases, looking at frequency of use, looking at importance, looking at satisfaction, everything's pretty high up here from the beginning through the end. The difference is here just the nuance with satisfaction is a little bit different than what you get. And as you're saying, that speaks somewhat to what your goals might be going into the project.
Absolutely. So let me pause for a moment here. I have another sobering thought to leave you with, but we won't go there just yet. Let's not make you despondent before we move on to story two. But I'm kind of curious what you guys think at this point. So this is a very mixed story about LMS system change. So I'm curious whether any of you have experienced similar patterns on your campus, and I'm even more curious, really, what you make of these insights. So what does, I've told you a little bit about what the data says, but what's your sense of what the data means, and what would it mean on your campus? What would it mean to your administration? Yeah.
I think comfortability may be driving the satisfaction factors. You know, I think about the fact that 25 years ago I grew up on a Mac, went to an institution that was Mac-free, had to learn that other machine. I've been using it now for 20 years, and I think I'm just now to where I'm at least as satisfied with it as I was with the Mac. I think it's where you are comfortable, where you're secure. In this case, it was better, it was used more, it was a little bit disruptive, and their satisfaction levels are slow to respond because what was wrong with the old way?
So you're placing this in the context of other system changes. What other thoughts do folks have?
Well, I think the LMS has become somewhat of a utility. And if you change cable companies or electric companies, I'm not sure that you're that becomes a wow experience necessarily. The other two, I think, are more important. There's more use. It's more important. And the fact that they aren't off the charts about this is the thing they love to do isn't that surprising. This is still pretty high because it's all above somewhat satisfactory. And it's a utility. It's considered a utility.
Can I ask a follow-up to that? I'm just curious, because we're also sitting in the day of MOOCs and blended learning and things like that, and it's not to say that the LMSs own that market, but I think some schools are looking to see how those things can be leveraged. Do you feel that that plays in at all to the conversation about LMS as a utility?
Oh, you know, definitely. I mean, the more broadly it's used, the more you expected it to be there. But that doesn't mean your excitement is super high. Now, at IU, we just finished three pilots of three major LMSs.
Now, that is exciting.
Yeah. And, in fact, we're doing a presentation tomorrow at 10:30 to briefly show results. The thing is that there are for our pilots, as people compared it to the current LMS, there were very different changes in satisfaction for their use of it that semester, more strongly with faculty than with students. But, of course, faculty chose to be a part of a pilot,
right?
Whereas the students are pulled into the pilot because they're faculty decisions.
And actually, depending on the way the things were happening, we saw more, Dave backed me up on this, more immediate changes in the way people felt about things that over time then it kind of panned out back to kind of that utility status almost, as you're suggesting.
So let me ask a follow-on question here. So how many of you think that you can, given this, actually sell an LMS system change at your institution?
I don't know that appealing to faculty or students in terms of satisfaction is what would sell it. I mean, in our case, what we've been trying to do is to broaden conversations about what's going to help people learn most effectively, most deeply, and that kind of thing. And so if we're able to bring it back to that, and we're also, trying to heighten awareness about what faculty can do and provide faculty development around that in that way, yes. But in terms of it's going to be faster, easier, better, nothing that comes with a learning curve is faster, easier, better, or more satisfying, at least not for me.
I think it had to be the one farthest away from any of the mics.
I've never been one to use a mic before. I'm pretty loud, but my company, we're not a school. We do sell LMS. That's mobile first. So what I found is that with your reports and faculty members having the hardest change in the beginning and then becoming more satisfied in the end, I feel like that change of developing that content is really difficult on the faculty members. So what I've found is that by offering the service of common cartridging it over and giving that ability to have a good start off point provides that better experience for a faculty member. It makes sense why students have the higher satisfaction at the end as well.
It's my mic.
I was wondering how these graphs compare to what the people used before, because that's also very significant. So we had WebCT for many, many years. People hated it, and then when we got rid of it, turned out they actually loved it. But that wasn't really...
Don't you love that?
It wasn't really the case. Now we've gone to Canvas, and there's only two institutions in Canada that are using it. But we have more people in Canvas now than we had at any point with WebCT. So it's a bit different trend.
So the question is, I think, what are the views on the LMS for schools that had a change versus those that did not? Is that where you're going with this? So what are the views on the LMS for schools that made the change compared to those schools who did not?
Dave?
I'm going to see if I understand. So what you're saying is that schools that actually go through the change are, some of them, in your case in particular, they're more satisfied and they're using it more after the change? Is that what you were suggesting?
Yeah, so it depends on what they had before.
So it depends on what they had before. Okay, so one of the things that's interesting about this data is that we didn't put this up here, but most of the schools that have undergone the change have moved away from either WebCT or Blackboard into an open source system, mostly Moodle. So there may be an effect here that's based upon what the system was before, actually what brand it was before to what brand it is afterwards. There's not enough variability in the systems that were used in the analysis to say categorically that these changes have mattered outside of the specific brand. So you can look at this as most of the pre stuff was WebCT and Blackboard, and most of the post was Moodle. There's some Sakai in there, there's a couple other things that are in there in the post. And even one school that went from WebCT to Blackboard, which I kind of thought was the same. But
So Dave, how many more years of data would it take for us to be able to answer this question more completely?
There's never enough years. It's more about the number of schools. I mean, this is where the limitation of having 56 schools and so many of our schools using the same systems over and over again, it's hard to say.
Got another question here.
I came in a little bit late, so I apologize if I missed this, but what types of schools are they? I come from an art and design college, so we're a very specific kind of user group for...
We actually have one of those in this set. Yeah. So these are largely liberal arts institutions, but there are some others as well. There are some national institutions.
Art and Design?
I think Mass Art and Design is actually in this group, yeah.
But also some larger schools that might also have some arts divisions, but not...
I wonder if we should take one more point and then move to story number two.
I just think it would be interesting to see a distinction in the data between schools where the faculty drove the decision versus IT-driven decisions. We're in the middle of an LMS review, and it's faculty-driven, and they are very satisfied with all of the decisions being made because they're making the decisions.
Although in some ways we're talking about two different things. This is apples and oranges. So what you talked about is the satisfaction with the decision as opposed to the satisfaction with the system. We didn't actually gather data about the drivers of the decision, but that actually would be very interesting. I mean, I wonder while we're sort of going down that road, I'll sort of reverse myself for a second. We are planning to go further with this analysis. We do have plans for publication. I'm curious what other kinds of things you would suggest to us to deepen this analysis. What are the kinds of things you really wish you could know right now?
This data was mostly from survey data?
It's all survey data.
Okay. So I wonder if you could use analytics or stats from the LMS itself.
Sure, to look at essentially what's being used inside the system? Is that the... in terms of stats?
Yeah, so most LMSs have reports you can run. So rather than relying on, self-reports, you look at actual use.
Anything else? Yes, another one back here.
I'd be interested in how mobile technology improves or doesn't improve learning outcomes using these devices in students and faculty.
Perfect transition point, thank you. Because that's where we're going next. So this was one of the pieces that we wanted to look at, and again, the idea here was when the institution, whether it is something the faculty are driving, and of course, if the faculty drive it, at least the faculty hopefully will be happier when it's all done. We'll see about the students. But what happens when the change comes at us and we're the ones who have to respond to it? And in a way, the change is happening and what's interesting is how is that changing the way people look at what we're doing for them, both on the library and IT side? Does having a smart device change the way you look at what our institutions are providing? So Gentry's actually going to talk to us a bit about that.
So we looked at smart devices, and when we say smart devices, the data that we had was smartphones and tablets. So it's not exactly mobile devices, but this is the data that we had right here. And all of these charts, we are going to put them on the MISOSurvey.org website and on the resource section of the ELI site. So, some of them will get a little bit more complicated than this, but don't feel like you're missing something as we kind of do the big picture. So we look at faculty and we look at students. And for this, we had 2 years of data because this is a more recent phenomenon. So So we have 2 years of data. We had about 70 schools, some of them overlapping with the LMS schools that we had there. And we looked at smart device ownership. So faculty and students, and you'll see the white is no smart device, and the green is smart device. And you'll see that they kind of grew proportionally. So they grew kind of the same way as you move over the top line and as you move over the students there. And so then we're going to take it and we're going to break it out into more detail. So let's take the same thing and then break it up into more detail. And the white is the part that stayed the same. And here we've kind of got some red state, some blue state thing going on. But you've got the blue is smartphone only. The red is tablet only. And then the kind of hash marks over it are both. Now, here you'll start to see more of a difference, where the faculty have more ownership of tablets, and the students have more ownership, that's the blue, of smartphones. And they kind of grow at the same rate, because you can see from the white part that's left open that people that don't have anything is kind of the same. I'm probably staying right in front of you. So that tells us, you know, a little bit that the faculty and the students are growing in the same way and what they're bringing to the table. So let's go to the next one. So this was interesting because we looked at for the students what about them that had smart devices. And for them, they're pretty much a uniform, homogeneous group. It didn't really matter whether they were male or female, and it didn't really matter what class year they were, as far as whether they owned a smart device or not. But then when we look at the faculty, is a little bit more female, and then we start to see a differentiation of age, where 39 and younger is there at the bottom, where more of them have a smart device. And then we see something different with the disciplines. At the very bottom there, you have arts and humanities, and it goes up STEM, and at the very top is other, which turned out to be more of the professional schools, like a business school or nursing or law school, something like that. But here you're seeing a difference among the faculty that are bringing a smart device. So here we have, we're going to talk about importance. And this is with students. And we took out the academic technologies. And the blue part are students that do not own a smart device. And the little green part are those that do own a smart device. And these are areas that turned out to be more important to those that had a smart device. So that's in addition. So the blue part they don't own, and the green part is where it was more important to anybody that owned a smart device. These, anything that we report up here are statistically significant. So for the students, as far as being important, if you're a smart device owner, there was only two, and those both had to do with the course management system. So when we look at the faculty and say importance, what was statistically significant, you have a lot more. One, in that we asked the faculty more questions, but also that there were more that were significant in there. And all of these areas in academic technology services, and we put the most at the top that has more green, were more important. So this might be one that you can't see as much, but we can put on there. But there's course management system, instructional technology support, audio video creation, anything that kind of falls in that range of academic technology services. So there was a lot more for faculty. So it's almost like we're looking at their, I don't know, I think of it like shopping habits as far as like what's important and what's satisfied. So let's go next to importance for students. So those were academic technology services. This is for traditional library type services. The green is most important, and the red kind of overlaps back, was less important. So almost all of the traditional library services to students that own a smart device were not as important anymore. The circulation desk, the course reserves, the online library catalog. I found it very interesting, I'm a library director, that the top two that turned out to be more important were things that were library as place. All of a sudden they did care more about the group study spaces, the physical comfort in the library. And as someone that's about to buy a bunch of chairs and reorganize our study spaces, this makes sense to me that this is also something that I can take back as I'm asking for funding to do something like that. And it's something that we see, but it's nice to see the data behind it to back it up.
Gentry, I just want to mention, for I think we've said it once in the room already, but especially for the folks who are with us online, we'll be getting these slides up online as quickly as possible. Apparently, they're not too easy to see for the online folks. Apologize for that, but we'll get them online as quick as we can.
And we're looking at the big picture right now, and then you can go back and look at the individual services. And there's a lot more analysis that could be done that you could follow a certain item all the way through. But those were the stories that we were able to weave right now. So this is students with library services. Let's look at faculty. So faculty, it was kind of the same, where there was a lot of them that were lower, the traditional library services, the circulation, the course reserves, things like that. For faculty, the three that turned out to be more important were ebooks, bibliographic instruction sessions, and then your input into library decisions that affect you. So those faculty with smart devices, those things kind of rose to the top. Ebooks make sense. It was just interesting, the BI part, and then all of a sudden wanting to have more, feel like they have more input and that's important to them. So this was importance, and now I think we're going to go over to satisfaction. And let me just say something about the correlation between importance and satisfaction. If someone tells me they're very satisfied with the library carrels, but then they rate the importance really low, I don't need to look at that so much. So to put those two together, there's a correlation to take the data between importance and satisfaction. So these are faculty smart device owners and students. And the different services that they're satisfied with. So you see that they are, across the board, less satisfied. You see a big zero up there. There's nothing statistically significant that they are more satisfied with. So all of a sudden, you've got a tougher customer that's, what we had a Keith Richards reference from Dr. Medina, they can't get no satisfaction. Now they're not satisfied with anything. And so they're tougher customers there. And so that was kind of interesting to see that for both the faculty and the students.
Is this something you guys see? Because one of the things that we get to in a lot of our conversations around the data is we see things like this, and we get this gut level of like, oh yeah, this we've seen this, and we can tell a story or two that way. I'm just curious if this kind, I mean, for the sense that at this point the margins of difference in terms of how important or satisfied they are aren't as big as they may become over time, but for these folks not to be satisfied more about anything, and then to see these kind of red lines, to me is a little alarming. So I'm curious just for everybody's thoughts here.
So we've launched Canvas as a pilot 2 years ago, and this is our first full year using it. But really it's context that would drive whether or not a mobile device is important to us. So I noticed that for our study trips that go abroad, for example, in the summer, then the use of a phone, the ability to put up images, the ability to chat as they move through Europe is far more critical than when they're on our campus.
Anybody else?
I'm curious how, you know, as we pull up this data, you know, what would be another layer to that would be nice to know? Or, wow, that's interesting, but, you know, if we added in more of the truly the mobile devices, you know, right now we have 2 years of tablet and smartphones.
I think part of it is there an app that makes the use of it on the smartphone easier? Because if it's just a web-based thing, on your little iPhone. I'm sorry, I can't read iPhones. They're too small for my eyes. But I'm just wondering, because I know like Blackboard has an app, it's kind of wimpy. They keep promising newer versions, and they're rolling them out. But I'm just wondering, is there an app for Moodle? I don't know.
There is, actually.
I don't know how good it is then, so.
But that goes across the range of the different things that we do, right, if we're talking library discovery layers or what have you.
Yes.
My question was basically the same thing, if there were websites that were mobile-friendly. I know that I have an iPad. I have a first-generation iPad, and I love it. I just purchased a Dell Venue Pro. I don't know if there are any people in this room that has that. But I am really, really frustrated with that tablet because I can't read it. And I think it has to do with Windows 8. So I'm just curious as to whether there are, I wasn't thinking so much mobile apps as mobile-friendly websites.
Mm-hmm. I think when we did the library discovery layers and online catalogs, those weren't as important, were they? And the students?
Dave? Is that
or maybe it wasn't statistically significant. If it's not up there, then it wasn't statistically significant. Because I thought something like that would make a difference, and then if you were able to look and see, well, have we made it tablet friendly? Have we made it friendly for your smartphone? Did that make a difference? And then you could maybe pull some of those individual statistics that you should have, just like talking about pulling individual LMS statistics, and maybe somehow put those together.
Although one of the things you have to remember is that there are 70 institutions in this analysis, so some will have better mobile websites and better apps, and some will have worse. So given that there's diversity of the presentation, you know, what then do we make of this?
I would say, though, you know, you go back to the original charts that you had that were showing kind of the growth of this thing, and that it was kind of in the 50%, and then all of a sudden the 75%, and you wonder where we're going. And to your point that, yeah, there are a few apps out there, and some of them are okay, and some of them are kind of lame. There's a degree to which the development in general is just lagging. And one of the questions that I guess comes for me is, while mobile websites are our great hope that we can do it once and it'll work for everyone, what is the future and what are the responsibilities that we have at our institutions to be able to provide the kinds of things that make these devices do more in the environments and in the kinds of interactions that we're trying to do on campus?
You know, we do have some questions that talk about, do you use it for academic use or for personal use?
That's right.
I don't remember if we took that. Did we ever look at that?
I'm sorry.
Whether you're using your device for academic use or personal. Did we layer any of that in there?
We have that data. I don't have it with me. And I can't recall what it says.
But I remember us having that discussion because we don't know how they're using to have that, and we do ask it how they're using it.
We've got one up there and then a few back here.
So another slice of this data, if you looked at demographic economic data, because adoption of smart technologies is growing among first generation lower income, so Native American populations, of African American populations, that is their technology. They've never been able to afford desktop or laptop, and now they're adopting the smart. So is that a way that you can divide it? And also, I don't know how that works with this set of, if they're small liberal arts colleges, how much of that population are they working with versus some of the larger institutions?
That's a great question, and it's an excellent point. Unfortunately, we have demographic data, but not at the economic means level. One of the things that's kind of interesting about this data in this time period when we've captured it, it's clear that in this 2 years, the growth is so extraordinary that 3 years from now, differentiating between smart device owner and non-smart device owner is not a point anymore, because nearly everybody's going to have some form of smart device. So these differences, in some ways, when we're looking at these differences that we're seeing here, we're trying to predict the future for you, of what's going to come in the next couple of years as everybody has a smart device and what are the demands going to be on your systems. I know that's sort of a tangent to the question, but by the time we could get that economic data, it's going to be past, is what I'm trying to say.
That's more questions back here.
More a comment, actually, relative to what you're asking about other comparators or what you might think about this data. We use a different survey on our campus called TechQual, and I've run it 3 times now over a 4-year period, every 2 years, once in 9, once in 11, and once in 13. And a piece that it asks that this survey doesn't ask is about their expectations, the level of service that they expect, that they consider minimal, and that they consider desired. And one of the things that has been interesting to see over that time period is a very notable escalation in the level of desired service and the minimum almost across the board, but certainly in areas that pertain to mobile, from the infrastructure layer to applications. It might be interesting to try to correlate the data between those two different types of surveys, because my guess is that the reason you have this lower satisfaction amongst smart device owners is that owning a smart device raises the level of expectation for application infrastructure and applications, because it gives the person access to much more easy-to-use consumer apps. And it no longer seems reasonable that the institution can't produce these simple, easy things that, you know, I can download Angry Birds and do this.
I can speak to that briefly, because I actually work very closely with Martha Carrillo, who runs LibQual, and they use the same setup: the minimum expectation, the minimum, the expected, and the perceived. The importance question that's asked in the MISO survey correlates very strongly to those sets of questions. So what you're saying is that, yes, as expectations are rising, we're also seeing it here. We're seeing that the importance of these services are rising for smart device owners. It's very tightly correlated. And that could be driving the lower satisfaction. Things become more important. The thing that was, you know, bugged you a little bit before now bugs you a lot more because it's more important to you. So it's amplifying anything that's not quite right.
We are running out of time, just because we want to make sure everybody, I know there's a 15-minute break, but can get to the next session, the general session. Is there anything else anybody would like to add before we kind of pull it to a close here? The conversation's been great. So many times when we're doing this research, you know, there's 5 or 6 of us huddled around a table, and we get to some things, and we find some other questions, but the stuff you've shared with us today has been fantastic. So anything else just to add in closing?
I was just curious, as far as people that aren't satisfied with the LMS, what are they doing about it? Are they using what alternatives are they using?
That's not something we're tracking at this point, although we do have some items in the survey about other kinds of cloud-based things, right? I mean, I know faculty in biology who are using Google Docs, and, you know, they go off in different places. So we ask those questions, and we get that information back at our institution. And I can even, with the survey data set that we get back from MISO survey, compare how our folks are doing compared to everybody else at all the other schools. So I don't know whether we're ahead or behind.
And Kevin, it's probably important to note also that we're not looking at people who are not satisfied with the LMS. So
right.
The LMS, no, you know, all of these services are highly satisfactory, some more, some less. You know, so this is really about the changes in satisfaction for this particular story over the course of an LMS transition and the time following.
I mean,
remains a satisfactory service, just not as much so.
Right. I mean, one of the things you could do, though, is you see how many are using it, how frequently they're using it, find out what that percentage is that isn't, and maybe our survey is confidential but not anonymous, so you might do some follow-up work yourself with folks to see why they may not be using the LMS as a specific tool. I think that's really all the time we have for today. Thank you very much for participating. The conversation was great for us. I hope you picked up some things along the way, too. Thank you.